Page 105 of The Unfolding is the story of Natalie Twaddell.
The enemy planted a little lie. I really believed that God had missed something, and I couldn't trust him with my boys. Almost like I was holding my breath, waiting for the next thing to happen, and I knew he would be with me, but it was like, this is what happens. I can't trust him with my loved one.
God's story has been unfolding.
Since the beginning of time.
He invites you to be a part of it.
Another page in The Unfolding.
Hey, this is Meredith Foster. That's just who I am. Have you ever said that? Usually it comes after we've acknowledged something about ourselves that maybe we don't like, but it seems impossible to change. For Natalie Twaddell, it was being fearful, anxious. I'm just a control freak, she would say. She felt justified in that, and no one would argue her right to be afraid. She had walked through a devastating loss, and that had cemented the belief that the next bad thing is just waiting to happen. But living that way is exhausting. She wanted to change, but she felt no hope because that's just who she was.
I had met Drew, and I had known the Lord about 2 years, and we met and got married pretty young, which I look now and I think it was the Lord's grace in giving us the time that we had together. We got married between our sophomore and junior year of college. And so we were kind of trying to grow up together. And he was in ROTC at UCLA, and that is training to become an officer. So I knew that in front of me, I would be a military, that I was a military wife, and that would be the future for me. So Drew had a very specific heart for soldiers. I mean, he would run back after they would do training runs. He would run back to the person who was last and run with him the rest of it. He really had a heart for Jesus and to be a light in the military.
How did you guys meet?
We met. I was a brand new believer. Actually, I wasn't a believer the first time we met, and that's even better because he would tell me I should come to on a mission trip, and I was forced to go to church by my parents. And I remember telling him, we really don't have anything in common. I wouldn't go on a mission trip because I don't believe what you do. And the Lord brought me to a different place about a year later when I was 17 and just radically changed my heart and my world. And so I started going to youth group, and he had been there when I had been forced to go. I would see him and I always just thought, oh, he's the cute Christian guy that we have nothing in common. But the Lord just knit our hearts together. I was a new believer, so there was a real passion and fire, and he had known the Lord for a while with a passion, and so there was just this sweet knitting together that the Lord did. We both went to the Master's College in California, and he was also doing UCLA ROTC military courses there, so he did both, and then I started working at that point. Once we got married, we lived in a little apartment in Van Nuys, and we literally had such a little amount of money that we stacked two inflatable air mattresses on top of each other was our bed. But we didn't care. We really believed, and that I could see the Lord's hand on just bringing us together at such a young age. It was messy at times, and but we were growing up together, and there was my faith was growing. The Lord was kind, I think, to really bring us together younger. And I look back, and that's a very sweet time. Once Druids, they actually commissioned them as an officer. So once that happened and he finished college, we knew then that at that point, and this is, you know, after 9/11, and so most people who are in the military know that they will be deployed. And so he started flying, actually, or we went for training in Alabama, Fort Rucker, Alabama. I say we went for training because I, you know, went through the flashcards with him. But he went to training to become a Black Hawk helicopter pilot.
Oh, cool.
So he was in aviation with the Army. And we were just 21, 22 at that point. We were there for about a year, and we got pregnant with our first son, Caden, and we're just really excited about that. But it was also scary because we knew that he was going to be deploying shortly after. We just knew. Everybody in the military at that point was deploying within a year or two. And so there was a mental gear up, I think, already at that point that I knew that I would be without him for, it was a year and a half. It was 18 months with our little boy.
Wow.
And so it was a 6 months of pre-deployment time at Fort Hood, and Caden was born before that. And so Caden was 6 months old when Drew deployed, and they did 6 months at Fort Hood. We saw him twice, and then he deployed in country to Iraq for a year. Wow. And I didn't see him until the 11th month mark. And that was really hard. And I think that the Lord, I can look back now, and I think he was intentional in teaching me to start to be alone, really, and not be, I was very, very dependent on Drew. I was always nervous something was going to happen to him. I mean, I'm nervous. It was an underlying nervousness that I felt.
All the time?
Yeah.
Lived with it.
Yep. And I think when he deployed and he came back, and he did, he came back and he was different. It was very hard, a lot of what he did. And it was hard for the two of us being married and not talking very much. Back then, Skype was very new. This was 15 years ago when he deployed. So I think it was an adjustment for us on our marriage. It was hard. Mm-hmm. But I think the Lord was very much preparing me for what was to come. And he was gracious in that, of teaching me to parent alone. Even though I could call Drew, I couldn't. We didn't talk very often at that point. They didn't have what they do now.
That just sounds like that would be such a hard experience to walk through. Did you struggle at first and then kind of find your legs during that time?
Oh, I struggled the whole time and found my legs. I don't know if ever. Okay. I still feel like that.
Yeah.
You know, this like, and especially as a mom, and I did feel very rooted in the Lord, but I felt this constant struggle to also, because it was easy to shut Drew out a little bit because he wasn't a part of my life. Mm-hmm. And that was the struggle, I think. I was fine day to day and, you know, got very used to being independent. And so the struggle, I think, was then being intentional in my marriage that I was still married, even if I didn't talk to him very much.
So I have friends who, you know, were in military families, and they often talked about after deployment, there's like that reentry phase of like, you know, wait a minute, I'm going to share parenting with you?
Yes.
Did you struggle through that at all? Okay.
For sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We loved Jesus very much at that time. But we were real people who, it was hard, very hard. It was very hard in parenting, because for Drew, he came back and he had left and he had a 6 month old. He came back and he had a 2 year old little boy who did not know him. I have one of my favorite pictures, and it's favorite because I could see, well, it was right after Drew got back from Iraq, and Caden's looking at Drew like, who are you? Hmm. But it's a sweet picture to me because Drew just had a huge smile and he really stepped into fatherhood. I was working at that time and he was home until he figured out what was the next, what the
was
next chapter was going to be.
Done with the military, or he was still in the military?
Yes. So he flew for Colorado National Guard. And so that meant he still had to fly certain hours, but it was different. It wasn't a full-time job at that point. And he came back and his heart for the military and for soldiers really changed. It became more intense as far as when he had been in Iraq, he had very difficult missions and picking up soldiers who had been wounded or even killed. And he didn't want to be the one picking them up anymore after. He wanted to be on the ground with the soldiers.
Wow.
And so he came back and he tried doing financial planning for a short time. He was still flying in the evenings with Colorado National Guard. But he very quickly came to a place of wanting to be full-time and to be on the ground and to be training. And it was specifically, it was Navy SEALs.
Were you on board with that?
No, I never was with all of it, but out of who I was, because I was afraid of what would happen. Mm-hmm. But I always felt that the Lord was always calling me to more and to trust him with Drew. Specifically, a few weeks actually prior to Drew going home to be with the Lord, I remembered looking at him and I felt a surrender in my heart that he was not mine. And that was a big difference for me because I felt like I'd always held very, very tightly onto him. And what if this happened and what if that? And I remembered saying to him, just go for it.
Did something trigger that?
No, I think it just was the out Holy of the Spirit. Blue. I really do think that God does not will, and all, I think many people would know this and know that God doesn't protect us from trial. But I do think he can prepare us for it when we are, I mean, in his kindness, his Spirit really prepared me, I think. Hmm. The day before Drew passed away, it was Memorial Weekend, and we went to Fort Logan, where he is now buried. But we went to honor soldiers for Memorial Weekend, and I remembered standing there and looking at graves, and I said to Drew, and I know this also was a way of the Spirit just preparing me because it was the next day he passed away. I became overwhelmed with what I would do if Drew died. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, he said, I mean, first of all, I'm home from Iraq. Nothing's going to happen. He said that. And he said, and if something were to happen, you need to do what you need to do because you, and I will always remember this. He said, you need to remember it's only my body that's here, but I'm present with the Lord. So you do what you need to do. That stuck with me because it was the day before, before he passed away, and he didn't know. So in the Lord's kindness, knowing that deep grief was going to come, he also allowed that conversation. Mm-hmm. And it was a big conversation. I even said to him, you know, what would happen if you... what would happen if you died? And what does that look like for the boys and, you know, for school? And where would you want to be buried? I couldn't remember any of that. And that was just really, mm-hmm. I know the Spirit, the Holy Spirit, just laying that on my heart to have that conversation. And not that it would have mattered for Drew's sake. He was with the Lord, but it did for me mm-hmm. and what that looked like. So in that time period, when he came back from Iraq, we had gotten pregnant with our second son. And so I was 29 weeks pregnant and I went to work that day and Drew was training and he'd fly in the evenings. And so he went to the gym like he always did and he brought Caden, our son, and Caden, you know, went to the little childcare there and they called me in the morning, I remember, and they were laughing about something and, which is really sweet because he jumped right into being a dad. But I got a call at work from a detective and he said there had been an accident and that he needed me to come to the hospital. And I said, is it Caden or Drew? And he said, I can't tell you anything. It's Drew. You need to come to the hospital. And I just thought, you know, he'd gotten hurt. I knew he had been training to become a Navy SEAL. And so there's a certain swim that they do. And he was doing it on his own. He had done it before. I had actually videotaped him doing this swim. It's 50 meters in a pool, which is the length of the pool and of most pools and back without oxygen. And usually if you feel lightheaded, you stand up. But the Navy SEALs want to see that you're willing to push hard. They have rescue divers in the pool when they do that. I remembered saying, Drew, what if something were to happen? He said, "If after everything I did in Iraq, I'm going to be just fine. I'll stand up if I feel lightheaded." And so I knew that's what he was doing. He was swimming and he was running and training for this next thing he had in mind, this goal he had. As I was driving, I thought, well, I can't just go to the hospital. Someone has to get Caden because, you know, when you check out in a kid, there's only certain people that can bring him. I'm like, I can't leave my 2-year-old at the gym. So I'm just going to head there instead. I'll grab him and then we'll go get Drew. And I got to the gym and I knew something had happened because there were just police cars everywhere and there was a big fire truck. And so I just went in and I said, I'm here to get my son, Caden. And they were surprised to see me because I think they thought I was heading to the hospital. And mm-hmm. I said, I'm Drew's wife, but I need to get my son first. So where do I go? And no one really said anything. And it was full of, I think, everybody who had been there trying to figure out what had happened. And then I saw Caden and I knew something was wrong. He was just sitting on a desk playing and I grabbed him and said, I need to get my husband Drew, but I don't know where the hospital is. Can somebody help me? And the police officer, because they weren't prepared to tell me. I don't think they knew they were going to see me. They had someone at the hospital waiting for me. And so he just shook his head. And I knew.
All those fears that Natalie had carried for years, they were confirmed. The worst she could imagine had happened. Part two of Natalie's story is coming up. But first, a word from our sponsor, Habib Habib, founder of H Squared Leadership Institute. Habib, you seem to me to be a naturally happy person, but I've heard you say that's not your natural disposition. How do you explain that?
I'm a regular human being. I mean, many people appear a certain way to you. It took a lot of work and training. So, you know, you've heard me talk about out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks. That means I'm spewing out what's really in my heart. You know, we get frustrated, we get angry about what's happening around us, we want things to be better. So if we dwell on that, it shows up in our conversation. But if we dwell on different things, what comes out of our mouth is better. That's why I appear to be happy, because I work on what's inside my heart. 1 Timothy 4, Paul is encouraging Timothy, do something good. And he says, have nothing to do with godless myths, but train yourself to be godly. You know, we go to the gym to train ourselves. We go to tennis and train and get our tennis game better or our football game better, et cetera. We can train ourselves to have better thoughts and have better actions. That's why I say, I'm not naturally like that, but I work at it. And I think a lot of people work at it too, not just me. I encourage people to work at their behavior, not just their sports and at their weight, you know. Mm-hmm. At HabibHabib.com, I have motivational minutes and inspirational minutes and talk a lot about these things. And it's just dwelling on the good in the world. There's still a lot of good in the world, and it can make us happier.
And now part two of Natalie Twiddell's story.
I need to get my husband Drew, but I don't know where the hospital is. Can somebody help me? And the police officer, because they weren't prepared to tell me. I don't think they knew they were going to see me. They had someone at the hospital waiting for me. And so he just shook his head. And I knew that Drew had died. And I just said, please, do not say anything else, because I had Caden with me. And I remembered thinking, like, I cannot lose it. And that is even God's kindness in giving me a sound mind in that moment to then be able, that I didn't want to. I knew that this was big for Caden as well.
How old was Caden?
He was 2.5. Yeah. And so he knew his dad. And at that point, Drew had been home from Iraq for about 6 months. And so he'd been with him every day. So I think, and at that point I said, I need you to call my sister and my parents and tell them to come here. And I remember just standing there holding Caden. You know, I had my 29-week pregnant belly, and just literally, I know that the Lord just gave me a sound mind until my sister got there. And then I handed Caden to my brother-in-law, and he took him. And then it was like, I knew what had happened too. I knew he had drowned, and he did. I met with a coroner, and they were very kind to meet with me and give me back like his wedding ring. And but he had drowned in 4 feet of water just like that. And I do think that my grief was so tangible. I mean, I could feel it, and everything shifted for me in that moment. But my biggest wrestling came for my boys, because I really did believe and knew I loved Drew very much. But I did know that the Lord would take care of me. But I did not understand that for my boys and this new little one coming on the way. And I still don't. I don't have a cleaned up answer for it. But I didn't understand it for them. I do remember after that, I just started having contractions because I was screaming. And I remembered even thinking, why is someone screaming? And realizing it was me. But my body reacted to Drew's death. But in God's kindness, they brought me to the hospital, and they were able to stop all contractions. And then a few months later, I had Ethan, who has just, he was such a chapter for me of new, for our whole family, for Drew's family as well as mine, this chapter that God still had me here for a purpose.
Can you talk about maybe those? So that was about 10 or 11 weeks between his death, living out that pregnancy, walking through grief, just even the physical burden of grief along with carrying a child.
So for the first 2 weeks I stayed with my parents, I really didn't want to go back to my home. That felt very, I was very anxious about that. And so the first time I went home, my parents were really kind and they said, leave Kaden with us. You go stay the night for the first time. Cause I would go to the house and it, I remember actually calling out Drew's name because I just wanted to hear his name in the house. But I remembered a very poignant moment. I looked at his shaver and there was dust on it. And I remembered thinking almost as like putting it on the Lord, like, if you allow this to happen, you have got to show up. And that happened a lot for me. This like, oh, Lord, because I didn't wonder why we're where he was. I knew the Lord was with him, but there also was a putting it on him, on the Lord, and saying, I know you're in control. I really believed that. And I also really believed that Drew deeply loved Jesus and that he was with the Lord. And so that for me was really big. It just was me figuring out, you know, I missed him and then figuring out raising two boys without my husband. And I knew it wasn't like if he'd been here, he would have been there that much. He probably would have been deployed again. And so I was very aware of that, that it wasn't roses if he'd been here. But it was a big shift to be a mom with two little boys. So my time with the boys, after that first time of me coming home, getting used to being in the home again. And then it was me and the boys. And my parents were very intentional of saying, we will support you, but we won't raise your children. And that was good for me. It empowered me. And it was a very good, because they believed that God would help me. And they helped me a ton. I mean, they were with me. But they made a point. And that was very good for me because it felt like I had to make a conscious decision to trust God that this was my family. And it would have been easy to step back and let people do all the work. And it also helped me move forward. And so a lot of my day-to-day was still, it was being a mom. And I'd get the two little ones, Ethan and Kaden. And Ethan was born a healthy 8-pound, 2-ounce baby boy. Drew's family was at the hospital. The military came. One of the lieutenant colonels, like they came to show honor for Drew, to the hospital, but that's also not when you really want to be seeing people.
Right.
I remember thinking this is, but I also so appreciated them doing that. It really meant a lot. They were showing honor for Drew. Mm. And, but there was this fine line for me of this, new chapter of being a widow. And I was 25. Because I did not feel like God was not with me. I knew he was, but I felt angry that he had allowed it.
That's what I wanted to ask. Yeah, where I could totally understand, because the reality of having a newborn and a preschooler or toddler, that's a heavy load. And then to carry grief on top of that. And it would have been so easy for God to have changed that circumstance.
Yes.
Yeah, I just wondered if you would.
Yes.
If you felt anger.
Yeah, I definitely felt anger. I remember one time being at church and seeing someone who's just a few years younger than me come in, and I knew who she was, and she just came in with such joy and lightheartedness, and I remember being extremely jealous and sad and angry that I know I will never be that again. I really felt that, that everything had changed for me. Everything I had felt fear of certain things before, but fear and anxiety became a way of living for me, even though I love Jesus. I remembered thinking, this has happened, and because of that, I have to make sure no one dies in my boys, that this never happens to them.
So it was like your fears were confirmed, and so now you could live in that place because, look, bad things really do happen.
Yes. Yes. And I think in that, the enemy very much planted a little lie. And everything began to shift around that for me, because the lie for me that I began to believe, and God was gracious and patient and kind to show me that, you know, patiently throughout the years and bring freedom, I think, once I realized it. But I really believed that God had missed something, and I couldn't trust him with now my boys, because they're probably, something's going to happen, or when is the next? Almost like I was holding my breath, waiting for the next thing to happen. And I knew he would be with me. I really believed that he would be with me and walk me through it. But it was like, this is what happens. Mm-hmm. I can't trust him with my loved ones.
What did that look like? Can you describe any kind of scenario in the practical sense, like with your boys?
Yeah. I always, my poor boys, I mean, if they were walking down the stairs, it would be very simple things like, you have to hold on, you have to hold on. Everything was intensified. Mm-hmm. And my family would laugh about it, like, Natalie, you have gone crazy. And I really would say, yeah, I have. And, you know, I felt very justified in it. Like, of course I've gone crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, my husband died. And that's, I think, where I got stuck. And in God's kindness of me getting stuck, a few years later, the Lord brought some healing, but I met my husband. I met my husband, Matt, now, and he was very patient with all of that, with all the heaviness, the freaking out moments. And but in his kindness and his love for my boys, the Lord gave Matt a deep heart for the boys very early on. And in that kind of knitting together that the Lord began to do, I began to see and become very tired of living in fear all of the time.
I bet it was exhausting.
Yeah, because it is when any of us live in bondage to something, or when we believe something about ourselves that is not what God has. I really had begun to believe that I just was fearful. That's who I was always going to be because of what had happened. And I think that often the names we give ourselves are tied back to trauma that has happened at times, or disappointment or loss. And for me, it was tied to Drew's death. I did keep wrestling with the Lord in that. And then the Lord brought me to a point where I felt very weary in fighting, in that fight, a constant fight to, I was pulled all the time between a place where I wanted to trust the Lord with my loved ones again, especially as I began to fall in love again with a wonderful man who loved Jesus, gave me freedom. Matt has always given me freedom to cry or grieve Drew's death. He's never, ever made it about him. And he's allowed that for my boys. And then when we got married, he called Drew's family to see if he could adopt the boys, but we've kept Drew's last name as their second middle name. But those things, the knitting together that the Lord was gracious to do, but in all of that, it's almost like there was a heavy weight. I felt it, the fear and anxiety. But there came a point for me, and this was really big, that the Lord brought me to a place where I felt very weary. I remember going somewhere and I was freaking out about, the roads were terrible in my mind. And I saw a friend, it was a snowstorm, and I saw a friend at the event I was driving to with my husband and kids, and I had been freaking out in the car. And I saw my friend there and I said, oh my goodness, weren't the roads just terrible? And she said, no, they weren't that bad. And I remembered actually that being a pivotal moment, that we had the exact same circumstance, and yet who she was in it was completely different. And at that point, I remember thinking, I do not want to live like this my whole life. It was a pivotal moment. And I actually went to a boot camp, a very like stripping things away and beginning to look at the ways I had been living and reframing that. And that was big for me.
You mentioned that you had given yourself a name?
Yeah.
Can you flesh that out a little bit?
Yes. And I really felt justified in making jokes even, or in being fearful or freaking out and anxious, and that's just who I am, and a control freak. I felt like I would laugh about it, mm-hmm. knowing that I felt literally, it was hard to breathe at times. I was so anxious of when something was going to happen. The Lord really brought me to something that in Genesis 32, when Jacob is going wrestling with the Lord, and the Lord pursues him one night, and he wrestles him. And Jacob holds on to the Lord. And in the morning, he is holding on to him and says, bless me. And this was really big for me. He says, instead of blessing Jacob in the way he maybe Jacob would have wanted, he gives him a new name. And he gives him the name Israel. And he walks away with a limp. And that was big for me because he was being reminded, I think that names are most important than our healing, the healing that we want to come, how we see ourselves and how it fleshes out with who Jesus sees us as. And for me, when I went to that retreat or that boot camp, how I wanted to finish my life was one of courage and rest, and I had none of that. I loved Jesus. And so we actually had to say my statement, and I have it written, it's on my bathroom wall, I am a woman of courage and I rest in the Lord. And I couldn't say it about myself because I couldn't. But I think when we begin to align who we are with who Jesus says we are because of what he has done on the cross, it reshapes how we view ourselves, and there becomes real freedom from disappointment, loss, trauma, those things. And that began, it wasn't overnight, but it was a shift in trajectory for me to really begin to choose that I could be those things. I didn't think I could. I felt justified in my loss and what it had done to me. But I knew I did not want to stay like that. I didn't want to live like that. It was heavy. And so the Lord did. He slowly began to give freedom. There were honestly one decision after another. It wasn't overnight. But things I used to be paralyzed by, I remembered making a decision, no, I'm going to trust God in this. Mm-hmm. And I would fail miserably. And I'd get back up and say, I'm going to trust you. I'm going to trust you that while my kid runs next door, I don't have to be standing at the door thinking someone's going to grab them. This is a wise decision. He's running next door to see if a friend can play. Lord, you are with him. And for me, it was visualizing truth, that I could visualize that Jesus was with my kids. And that became big. In Genesis 32, after that happens with Jacob, he goes on to more than double the amount of times he continues to call himself Jacob after God has renamed him. And I love this because I think that for me and for any of us, there is this like, I had to keep reminding myself too of who I was in the Lord. It wasn't this one time a day. It was a reframing of everything because it shifted everything. My behaviors, my habits, all of that had to shift based on that.
Were there any experiences along the way that was like watershed moment where you went, oh, that was a victory?
Yeah, for sure. I think the Lord was gracious to give me some of those to encourage me. This sounds so silly, but for me, in Colorado, we have really beautiful mountains. They also would almost be paralyzing for me to drive in with my husband and to trust him and to trust that the Lord was with me and my family and that he knew what was best and that he saw my family. And this was after Matt and I got married and that the Lord blessed us with an adorable little blonde hair, blue-eyed little girl named Rylan. And I had everything that I wanted as a mom. I was happy. I had a husband who loved me. I loved him. And I remembered us driving in the mountains, and I would pray over our trips for weeks beforehand what I was anxious about. If my kids wanted a ski trip to school, I would be checking the weather. And I made a decision, I remember, to say, I'm going to check it once, and then I'm in my mind going to picture them physically not in my hands, that they are in the Lord's hands. Physically, mm-hmm. I had to visualize what actually was happening, and that did shift things for me, and I remembered actually, because one of our prior times driving up had been pretty terrible in the mountains, and it really isn't fun for other people. And I think when we begin to live a certain way, It affects those around us. So for me, if I'm living in a way of fear and anxiety, my kids are learning that. And I could see that. And that became a big breaking point for me that I didn't want to live like that mm-hmm. because I remembered seeing one of my kids freaking out about something that, and I said, stop freaking out. And I realized that, oh my goodness, he's doing exactly what I would do. It was something for his sister. Don't do that. Don't do that. Something's going to happen. And mm-hmm. I had then been teaching them that, and I really did not want to do that. And so this other time going up to the mountains, it was about a year later, the same ski trip that we always do. And I prayed, and my husband said, but when you pray, do you trust that he hears you? Is it just one-ended, but do you trust then and let that go? And I say, but I pray all the time. I mean, I'm in my head all the time. I'm praying. But Matt was good of, but do you feel, do you trust God when you pray? Does it then you say it and you lay it? And I didn't. And I began to do that. And that trip, I remembered actually being very proud, like, oh my goodness, that wasn't as bad as I thought. And it was exact same weather, exact same circumstances, but God had shifted some things in my heart mm-hmm. to where I could view it differently mm-hmm. and view him differently.
So how long ago has it been now since you lost Drew?
Drew died in May of 2008. So it's been 13 and a half years.
And you look at your life now, mm-hmm. how are you different now than you were?
Meredith. It's so funny because I will say this, actually my oldest now, Caden's now 16. He just turned 16 two days ago. And we were having a conversation one day and I said, I think that everything in my life is different after, we call him Daddy Drew because Dad is Matt for the boys. I said, after Daddy Drew died. And we started talking about that. I mean, even, you know, what I do for a job, I love now teaching fitness classes. And that was, it is because I went through so much pain in Drew's death that then fitness isn't that as painful maybe. Mm-hmm. But there were, everything shifted in who I became. Caden said to me, I bet he's really excited for you. And I thought, you know, we don't know what God allows, but that Caden could see that I was a different person mm-hmm. because I had told him so much of who I was beforehand. And so I think there's this part of me where I think, wow, in God's, so much of what I have now in my family, in God's plan that he saw, that he allowed, and that he was patient to bring healing for me, but he saw what he was going to do. And this was really big for me. In one of, I began going to Grief Share, and it was a Christian grief group. And I was with 80-year-old widows, and I was 25 coming in with my two-month-old baby and a three-year-old then. But we got it. We were on the same, there was the same loss. And I remembered one of the older ladies saying something that stuck with me. I said, but I don't understand why God would have allowed this for my boys. Why didn't he let Ethan meet Drew? That just was really hard for me. It was something I couldn't get past for a time. And one of the ladies said, even if you had the perfect answer, it wouldn't matter. The pain would still be there. And that stuck with me, that a lot of times I think we look for the perfect answer in a loss or a disappointment. We get hung up on this certain question, why would God do blank? And I think that's stepping back from it and seeing that sometimes even with that, it wouldn't negate the pain that was still there. And I needed healing from that. And the Lord did bring that. But that was big for me in healing, to quit looking for a specific answer, because I don't think grief can be tied up in a bow. It's not supposed to be. And that helped me. Then I didn't feel like I was wrestling for, like, to make sense of God with this one thing. It was like, I'm not going to, it's true. Even if God said, this is why I did blank, blank, it wouldn't matter. It wouldn't take away the pain that I had from Drew's death.
So you've described, you know, going from paralyzed by fear in a lot of ways. Like, what's fear like for you now?
Yeah. So after the Lord did start to give these bursts of freedom, I got really excited about that because I just felt like a new person. I really felt a new, yes. Because when you think you're living a certain way and that will always be who you are, and I mean, that's paralyzing. And for me to have hope that I could, even with moments where I still had to pull myself back and make, you know, I could fall back in old patterns, I could see how quickly there was hope. I met with a friend of mine, Julie Thomas, and I started telling her the things the Lord was doing. And I was so excited about the newness God had brought in my heart in healing. And a few days after that, I was driving and it was right by her house. And a man was crossing the street and was about 8 feet away from me. And a car plowed through the intersection and hit him. And he flew up and landed on the cement. And I ran to the man, and I mean, they had to take him away, but he was, it was really bad. It was pretty terrible. I went to the side and I remembered crying, and everything that I had known before, the old way of living, like all the thoughts that were very familiar to me, all of that came right back.
What were those thoughts?
Those thoughts were, see, this is what happens. It's just, when's the next bad thing going to happen? You cannot have hope. There's not hope. And I felt that. I called Julie right then. The Lord told me, you need to call Julie. And I was sitting there waiting to tell the, you know, after they had taken the man away, and waiting for the police. And I called Julie, and Julie came to me and spoke truth over me. And she hugged me, and it was a really hard thing to see. But she said, do not let the enemy take back what the Lord has already started to take back and redeem. Do not let the enemy get a foothold. And that was very big. It was a rising up moment, because I think that often in the places that the Lord begins to give freedom, the enemy comes back twice as hard. And I felt that. It was very traumatic. It was a something that triggered death in me because of a prior experience. And yet, her saying that to me, it called out more in me that the Lord, it was a trajectory change. I had a decision to make, if to the left or to the right, of how I was going to frame this experience. And I have a pair of old sweatpants that they're just my favorite, because they fit in all the right places, and they're so ugly and worn, and I've had them forever, but they're my favorite because I know them well. My body knows these pants. That's what those old thoughts were for me. Mm-hmm. I could put them right back on. They would have felt so comfortable mm-hmm. to go right back in, and it was a decision, and that the Spirit gave me strength to not do that. And I was still scared, and it shook me up, but it was a completely different experience than what it would have been if it had happened a few years prior. And so I think one of the things the Lord kept bringing me back to of new names in that, and freedom that the Lord brought from fear when Drew died, is my son Ethan. This is probably 6 months after the Lord just started really shifting things for me. And I felt it. Like, I felt a little lighter. I felt that I could trust God, whatever happened. Not that he would do exactly what I wanted. And I saw Ethan, and I was putting him to bed, and he wanted to wear a shirt to bed, and he never had done that. And I said, well, why are you doing that, bud? And he finally told me, he said, well, someone told me, and this is my son who's football player, strong, and someone had told him he had teased him about his weight, and he was, I mean, it wouldn't matter what he was, but whether or not he was unacceptable. And a mama bear rose up in me. Mm-hmm. But I and his older brother was in the room at the time, and this was probably about 3 or 4 years ago. I remember feeling the Lord wanted that I could see he was beginning to believe a lie for him, and that he was then changing his patterns around that lie. And so I grabbed my phone, and his older brother's in the room, and I said, Ethan, the Lord wants you to know you are a strong young man in the Lord. And he said, but I'm not. And I turned my phone around so that he could see himself, you know, where he could see his face. And I said, I want you to look at yourself and to say, I am a strong young man in the Lord. Just like for me, my phrase had been, I am a woman of courage. I rest in the Lord. I could not say that. But once I began to speak that truth over myself and believe because of what Jesus had done, he already saw me that way, I could settle in that. And he did. He began to actually, his shoulders settled down, and his older brother got that moment was big. He was like, you are, Ethan. And I brought it up to Ethan the other day, and he's now 13. And he goes, I barely even remember that. And that's what I wanted, mm-hmm. that he didn't even remember that he vaguely remembered. He said, that's right. Someone had said something, but it didn't stay with him. Mm-hmm. And that is what I wanted. And one of the, in finishing with Jacob, one of my favorite things in the story is that Jacob, after the Lord begins to set him in a new place with a new name, comes back and reminds him again. In Genesis 35, Jacob's wife, Rachel, is dying in childbirth. And she dies, but as she's dying, names their son Benoni, which means son of my sorrow. But Jacob, because of the freedom God had given him, was then able to rename his son and names him, your name is Benjamin, son at my right hand. And I felt this reoccurring theme and have continued to in the Lord giving a new name for me so that I can then do that for my kids, the people in my circle to encourage them in that too. And so I think it shows God's heart is always one of redemption and freedom.
I asked Natalie, so how do you begin to break away from those names that have stuck, the ones that are based on a lie? She said she started choosing the opposite. She couldn't imagine a life of courage or rest, but with God's help, she began choosing the opposite. Instead of saying, I am fearful, she began to say, I am courageous, and then started making decisions that were courageous. She says, once you recognize the lie that you've believed, identify the opposite, and make decisions that align with that. Boy, we are so grateful to Natalie for sharing her story with us. Well, it's a big week for the Unfolding Podcast. Thanks to your amazing support, we rolled over 1 million downloads. That means 1 million times listeners have had the faith-inducing experience of hearing about the goodness and power of God. Thank you for listening, sharing, writing kind reviews, and subscribing. Big thank you to the more than 100 people who have shared their incredible stories with us. Thanks to our leadership, Ryan Springer, Jeff Scott, and Jason Sharp, who have given us free rein to run with this idea of telling God's stories. I can remember years ago, producer Jason Rackow and I were still just talking about the idea of the Unfolding. And I said something to Jason like, yeah, but do you think people will listen? And he said, oh yeah, stories like this would get 1 million downloads. And just being honest, I didn't say it out loud at the time, but I thought, I don't know. That tells you how much I know. And that's why the Unfolding is a reality, because of talented people like Jason Rackow. Huge thanks also to our sponsor, Habib Habib, who believes in and invests in the Unfolding. He's the founder of H Squared Leadership Institute. You can find encouragement to develop the full power of your leadership potential at HabibHabib.com. The Unfolding is produced by Northwestern Media, a ministry of the University of Northwestern St. Paul. We'll be back next week with another page in the Unfolding.